and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host. Delighted to be with you today, March 19th, in beautiful California Oakland Hills, broadcasting live out of Studio132.com with BZ Lewis, our esteemed sound engineer, six-time Emmy winner. Thank you to Blame Sally for the music. Today, we are talking with Hemant Elhens, who is the CEO of Synerzip, about leveraging remote software development in India and how leveraging offshore and India-based software development for growing companies, best practices to reduce friction and the risk involved. But before we get there, I want to do a shout out to our new startup product communities coming on board. Welcome to our new community in Silicon Valley, as well as in Mountain View on the peninsula. And a shout out to new members. You can find out more about the startup product movement for product excellence at startupproduct.com. There are monthly in-person events in local areas. We are up to 16 communities worldwide. Coming up here in Oakland is Startup Product Open Oakland, an innovative unconference on March 29th, all day, blowing open the doors for everyone to contribute, question, and interact with each other's ideas, prototypes, products, problems, and process using open space technology. Go to startupproduct.com, look for Open Oakland. The third annual global study of product team performance on the dynamics of product team performance, which identifies factors that impede or improve product development outcomes, is going on. Take the survey before April 7th, and you'll get access to the free white paper on the results. This is very important because everyone needs to know what forwards product team performance. And what are the aspects that contribute to high-performing teams? Go to manage.questionpro.com, manage.questionpro.com, and take the survey today. The Webcast Digest is daily curated educational webcasts, webinars, free online events for your continuous learning. Go to webcastdigest.com to subscribe. There's a free white paper about sales enablement for product managers available at startupproduct.com/contundo, C-O-N-T-O-N-D-O. And thank you to the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, founded in 1998. The AIPMM promotes worldwide excellence in product management education with training, certification opportunities, professional networking, providing corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. The AIPMM is the only worldwide certifying body of product managers, product marketing managers, certified innovation leaders, and agile product managers. Go to AIPMM.com and check out their excellent Friday webinar series. And I'm very excited to be giving a webinar on Tuesday, March 25th, with Synerzip, where I'll be talking about what lean brings to product marketing. Go to synerzip.com to register for that webinar. So today, I'm talking with Hemant Elhens, who is the CEO of Synerzip. While there is a compelling economic argument to be made for leveraging offshore and India-based software talent, there is significant friction and risk involved in the implementation. Developing enterprise software is a complex undertaking for various reasons, including the fact that requirements keep changing and continue to evolve throughout the development process, while technology from the back end to the front end, the business logic, and all kinds of things keep evolving. So if before I bring on Hemanth, I want to tell you that you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio. We're a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio network. We're at www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. If you are tweeting, follow us at PRODMGMTTALK. That is our hashtag, pound, PRODMGMTTALK. And just search for us. We're available on iTunes, on Stitcher. There is an Android app in the Google Play Store called PRODMGMTTALK. And you can follow us at Blog Talk Radio, where you'll get pinged about upcoming events. We're weekly regular show, as well as you get access to our archive. If you are listening live today, you're welcome to call in to the show at 323-927-2957. And the best live listening quality is to call in to the phone number, 323-927-2957. BZ will screen your call. You're welcome to listen online, but there's some drag and delay involved. And you're also welcome to call in and chat with us. So let me tell you about Hemanth Alhens. He is the founder and CEO of Synerzit, which is an agile software development partner for innovative technology companies. Hemanth has in-depth expertise in the business of software, including strategy, sales and marketing, product development, both onshore and offshore, as well as venture financing. Prior to starting his entrepreneurial career, he was the engagement manager at McKinsey & Company, product line vice president at IT Technologies, consultant at TRG, and he started his career as a software engineer at DEC, Digital Equipment Corporation, which is now Hewlett-Packard. He holds an MBA from the University of Chicago, an MSEE from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and a BSEE from Indian Institute of Technology in New Delhi. And his company, Synerzit, offers in-depth expertise in agile software product development to venture-funded small and mid-sized software companies who are focused on social media, mobile, big data analytics, cloud, and enterprise software. Synerzit is based in the United States and has a software development center in India. The dual shore model gives clients the ability to tap into Synerzit's superior engineering talent while cutting development costs by 50% and adding significant business flexibility by serving as an extension to current software product development. Go to synerzip.com. That's S-Y-N-E-R-Z-I-P.com. Hemanth, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Cindy.
Great. Great to have you. Is there anything that I left out or that you want to add to provide some context?
No, I think you did a wonderful job of providing the backdrop of my background as well as Synerzit and the overall background on your show. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Great. So regarding offshoring development, so this is a huge difficulty and challenge for everyone, you know, in product management, dealing with remote teams, and it's more and more people who are working remotely. But it's hard enough from a product management perspective, to work with engineers who are sitting in the next room or in the other, in the next cubicle. So to add to that, trying to work with a remote team, it just seems insurmountable. So this is a big question, and then we'll go in deeper to the many questions we have. So from an agile point of view, and I'm going to jump around to our questions not in order. This was really slated as Q5, but how does an agile development model work with a distributed team? How should you go about it?
Right. So I think this is an ideal case, as all practitioners of Agile, and I'm assuming, perhaps I'm hoping rightly, that most listeners here are familiar with the Agile development approach, which is essentially the building software in short cycles of delivery and respecting and appreciating the feedback, value of feedback that comes in each cycle before starting the next cycle. So that's in a nutshell what Agile is, and that's absolutely the right way to build high quality software that serves the market need and has the engineering discipline and rigor behind it. So given that Agile is the right way to build software, co-located teams have always been the ideal scenario. If you have your product manager, you have your developers, you have your QA people sitting around in the same room, visible to each other, in short walk from each other, that's absolutely the perfect way. And if you can afford to do it that way, you should. There's no reason not to. But the reality, unfortunately, Cindy, as we all know, is far from the ideal. The reality is that, you know, people tend to sometimes move to places where they like to live. Someone may want to live in Bay Area while their development engineering team is, say, in Texas or Boston, or someone may want to live in the near the mountains in Colorado. It happens. So distributed teams have been a reality for quite some time. People live where they want to live, and then they have to, therefore, collaborate over time zone often and over geographic distance. So it is indeed a compromise. Let's accept that as absolutely right, that if I had my brothers, I would definitely have co-located team, but that's not how it ends up working out in reality. So therefore, given that distributed teams are indeed a reality, the question is, how do you make them work when it is even more distributed in the case of remote and offshore model like we're discussing here with India, which I'm sitting here in Dallas, Texas, which is after daylight savings time, we are 10 and a half hours ahead of India. And in Bay Area where you are, you guys are 12 and a half hours ahead of India. So it's, you know, day and night difference essentially for all practical purposes. With that much of a time zone difference and you're limited to conference calls and a couple of hours of overlap a day, it is a tough challenge. But the way to make it work that we have seen in our experiences is there are certain guidelines you got to follow. One is, as far as possible, don't split the development in QA across the boundaries. So most Agile development gets done in the units of a Scrum team. And of course, there are other flavors of Agile practice, Kanban and so on, but let's just use Scrum as a dominant form. So Scrum team is, you know, your typical team of four developers and two QA. We recommend, and we observe that works well, is keep that team intact together, co-located in one time zone, whether that time zone is in India or is in Bay Area. Doesn't matter, but that unit of a team, the developers in QA ought to be sitting next to each other. That's very important because that cycle of close collaboration results in good quality software we've observed and most people have. The product management function is where the flexibility can come in. And I know you mentioned in the beginning that it is hard enough for a product manager to communicate their vision and what they want to build to a cubicle next door. How are they going to do it, you know, across the 12 hours of difference and, you know, thousands of miles of distance? But we have seen the way to make it work is product, the role product owner in Agile, which is a person who is working day to day with the engineering team, that can be remote and sync up on a once or twice a week kind of a frequency in a steady state. When the team is running, development is happening, your QA and dev is co-located in India, and you have a product owner, let's say, in Silicon Valley, that can work, we observe, work quite well with a twice a week kind of a sync up frequency where you're aligning yourself on the roadmap and the features definition and all that. But what you do end up doing is you end up designating someone in your dev and QA team as a proxy product owner. So a local person in that India time zone in this case will function as a proxy product owner. So for the purposes of local team, they will be the person who's always available to answer questions about requirements / stories and the intent of it. So that's generally how we see. So don't break dev and QA, but go ahead and break the product owner to be in a different time zone, but by making up for it by having a proxy product owner locally.
Got it. So then that proxy product owner is a liaison to the remote team.
Yeah, so he or she is a liaison for sure, but he's still a hands-on in the Agile spirit. He's still a hands-on developer or a QA person in that engineering team, but they're just perhaps a little more senior, perhaps a little more mature in terms of knowing the domain, industry domain, and the product domain. So they have a better understanding of the intent and the vision of what is being built. So therefore, they're a little more qualified than the rest of the team, perhaps, to answer questions when a developer says, what does this story really mean? Or what? Or they have some clarification questions. So they don't have to wait for 12 hours to ask that clarification question of a product owner sitting in Silicon Valley. They can ask that question. And for the most part, get the complete answer within a few minutes with a proxy product owner.
Excellent. So then going back then, for teams, for startups, for companies who are looking at moving to offshoring their development, when is the right time for them to consider it? And, you know, I want to add to that, look, engineers, software developers, they are revered here. So this might be, you know, not a nice thing to suggest here in Silicon Valley to instead of bringing them here to actually go and seek them elsewhere.
Right. So I think given that there is quality talent available worldwide, you know, we are sitting in living in an environment, fortunately, of a flat world, where there are excellent developers here in Dallas, there are excellent developers in Austin, in San Jose, and so in Mumbai and Pune and all places. So there are great developers everywhere. So every team needs to assemble the right mix of developers that allow them to achieve their objectives of product development. So the right stage, the question you ask, which is what's the right stage? So if we are thinking about the startup world, which is, you know, companies get formed with a glint in the eye of a founder or a set of founders, and first few couple of years usually are spent in incubating and validating the idea, where they're, you know, building maybe a prototype and throwing it against the wall of market and seeing if it sticks, and then iterating it back again, and that's a common cycle, and it takes a couple of years to incubate a good idea before it takes hold, and then perhaps in that stage you raise what is known as seed round of capital to do your prototyping, and then you get to the next stage, which is, you know, commonly A round of financing, where you are now getting some real money, you know, a few million bucks perhaps, to build out the first version of the product and get first set of customers sign up for your to validate your value proposition, and then hopefully right things happen, those customers really validate your idea and lap it up, your value proposition, and you need to now grow the engineering team and build out your product to the next level, so you get the next round of financing, assuming you need more money, you don't have operating profitability. So in that general journey of a startup from incubation stage, seed stage, then A round, then B round, and then so on, at some point, you know, you either get acquired or go public or become self-sustaining at a minimum, so you don't need external capital. So in that journey overall of a technology or software startup, what our observation is that bringing in the complexity of a remote offshore development that we are talking here, it's not a good idea to do that before A round. While you're in the incubation stage and the seed stage, you are better served, in our experience, with a local team, small local team, because a lot is changing at that time. Like I described, your market validation, you're going through short cycles of market feedback, you're quickly pivoting slash iterating on your idea, so you need a very nimble local team, and you don't have the discipline, more importantly, of software development, because you're only figuring out the market right now. That's not a time in the stage of engineering to be doing robust test-driven developments and full QA automation and continuous delivery, and a lot of those engineering practices, it may be too early to invest in those practices while your market is still not yet validated your idea. So in those stages, which is seed stage and the incubation stage, it is better to have a local team. That way you have much better control over the short cycles of delivery. Now, sometimes because of capital constraint that you need four developers to build the first version and you don't have the capital to hire four developers, and therefore you can hire one developer here and three developers have to be in some lower cost option like India. Yeah, I mean, that's a compromise. You do it with recognizing that it's a compromise. But if you had a little bit of a capital room, then I would suggest and recommend that for the seed and the incubation stage, keep it local. And once you get to the A round and B round, that's when it's the optimal time to start bringing in the advantages of a remote and India offshore team.
Excellent. So following on that then, what are the main decision criteria for deciding to go with offshore India model or stay local? And so I would assume it has to do with economic reasons.
Well, you know, that's usually the most obvious one, Siddhi, and it is indeed is the dominant one for the most part. But there are a few others that are very important, and sometimes they look and they become actually even more important than capital. So let me kind of go through what I have seen as a kind of a decision criteria that one a founding team or a management team should consider when they're thinking about whether remote or offshore India development should be an avenue for them to pursue or not. So one is what you just said, which is capital. If you have unlimited capital, and I'm being a little bit stretching the truth, I mean, let's say you have sufficient capital. I mean, that's a better word. If you have sufficient capital, why complicate your life, right? So that's one criteria. Again, not the only one, but one important, perhaps the most important one. Second one, which is actually quite important in certain parts of North America, is availability of software talent. And I think there are parts of, for example, you know, if you are in, let's say, Fort Worth, Texas, I'm just using that as an example, there's not that much availability of software talent in that geography. If you want to be within driving distance an hour or so of Fort Worth, Texas, you will have a hard time attracting talent because there's just not enough talent there. So that's another reason why companies start looking outside to India model, which is they just don't have enough local talent. Even though they may have enough capital, they're not enough talent availability. Another third often reason criteria to consider is special technical expertise, which is you may be an enterprise software company and have been successful at that for a while, but now you need to build a mobile version of your software or an iPad version of your software, which is a common need, of course. But you don't know where to even start hiring for the mobile expertise and how to build mobile the right way so it works on iOS as well as Android and can be gone through the relevant or the applicable app stores and all that. So I'm just using that expertise as an example, but there are many other technical expertise that you may not have in-house. And again, you may not even know how to hire for them. So that's another third potential reason to consider a remote or offshore team which has expertise. And the fourth, probably a very important reason is time to market. Even if you may have capital and talent availability, it may take a time to build up a team. Let's say you need to add four Scrum teams to deliver such significant new feature functionality that your market is demanding now because a competitor just, you know, introduced something that you need to match, right, at least match. Now, to meet that time pressure of market driven, you need to ramp up your engineering team quickly, and sometimes it is easier to ramp up with a development partner, perhaps a remote development partner which has access to larger talent pool, and not only access to larger talent pool, in this case with the India model, but also the time zone starts working to your advantage. The fact that India is 12 hours ahead, you can almost start developing round the clock. So you have four Scrum teams in Silicon Valley, you have four more Scrum teams in India, and when the four Scrum teams go back home at the end of their day, 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., whatever the end of the day is for them, guess what? That's the beginning of the cycle for the India Scrum teams to come online. So you can now start running your development cycle almost 24/7 and really accelerate your product roadmap and delivery. So the time to market. So those are the kind of four reasons, which is capital, just pure availability of talent pool in the local market, special expertise, and the time to market. So these are considerations one should go through and decide if it makes sense for them to sign up for an India model.
Excellent. Excellent. So if the company does decide to leverage India for software development, should they set up their captive development center or partner with an India-based services provider? So you have to explain what is meant by a captive development center.
Yeah. So this is what the captive development center is. Let's say you are a company you've been around for 5-6 years, you're past your B round. Now things are beginning to click in terms of market growth, and you have a in-house engineering team of less than 50 engineers, and things are generally going well for you as a company. But your board says, now look, we are signing up big customers, sales team, sales guys are really bringing in good deals. We need to double our engineering capacity to deliver. So you have two options at that point. One thing, you have three options. Let's kind of start to simplify. If you're double your engineering capacity at that point, one is for the reasons I just listed in the previous question. You can, if you have sufficient capital and you have enough local talent and all that, you just add 50 more engineers locally, and let's say timing is on your side. Fine, that's one way to do it. So that's obvious, straightforward. No further explanation needed. Second is, you say, okay, I need to do it quickly, so timing is not on my side. I have capital constraints, so I need to look at the remote offshore India model. Then you are left with an alternative choice of doing a captive. Captive meaning you set up your own shop in India. So you go, your VP of engineering or your CTO or your VP of operations, whoever, someone in the management team is now given the charter to set up an India office. And that's what generally called a captive India development center. So there, the cycle is you go scout around for right city, right location to set up an office. You go through the local process of hiring, attracting talent, and then putting together the infrastructure that is needed to get the team to start functioning. And off you go. So that's the general kind of a simplified process of captive. An alternative way to do the India model is you find a partner like Synergy, like we are, and you hopefully find the partner that fits your needs, and in which case you don't have to go to India to set up an office. Your partner already has an office. They already have a recruiting and a cycle of attracting, bringing in talent. You tell them what you need in terms of talent skill profile. You need Java developers or iOS developers and whatever else your skill profile is. They assemble the team for you. And then you start just leveraging the team for doing development. So that alternative model is where you bring in a partner like Synergy. So that's kind of what the captive model is when you do it yourself.
Got it.
So the question, I think, let me now answer the question you asked, which is why not do captive, or why do captive versus go to with a partner if you do decide that it makes sense for you to leverage the India model. So our observation is the criteria that you got to consider is, one is what I just hinted on in the beginning here, which is there's a certain amount of management distraction that has to happen if someone senior in your team has to start up your captive operation in India. It's a new world. It's a new place. Things could work differently. You got to have someone in your management team to spearhead. You will have to have some sort of a country head in India and take care of facilities, regulation, entity creation, and all the usual stuff, just like you would do if you were to open a new office in the U.S., but much more complex. So you have to be ready for that level of management distraction. Second is you have to have some confidence in your brand, your company brand's ability to attract and retain talent. And this is very important, that you may be a high-flyer company in Bay Area and able to attract talent locally in Silicon Valley because, you become visible in the local market for whatever good reason. But when you go to India, you are one of many companies trying to recruit, and you're not a local brand that talent pool looks up to. So it becomes very hard to attract and, more importantly, retain talent in India, even though you may have the money to set up a nice, plush-looking office and pay premium salaries and all that, but the talent pool behaves differently. So that's another criteria to keep in mind, is that unless you have confidence in your ability to attract and retain talent in the local market in India, you have to be careful. If you're a Google, you're a LinkedIn, you are a Texas Instruments, or you are a Cisco, yeah, you got a brand name appeal that you can set it up. Otherwise, it's not easy. Another criteria to keep in mind is the scale. That if you're going to start with a 5-person, one of, or 4-developer, 2 QA type of a typical Scrum team, and all you need is right now 1 or 2 Scrum teams, that's such a small number in the big scheme of things that the economics come in the way. The setup cost of setting up a facility and setting up the infrastructure and hiring process and all that, it's an overkill. And you don't even know what your long-term commitment is to that that region for development. So it comes in the way of deciding to go captive. So I would summarize that use captive only if you have the brand name to attract talent, you have the management wherewithal to manage the setup process, and have the scale to warrant that upfront investment. Otherwise, you're better off going with a partner company like a Synergizip, but retain the option when you, even when you go with a partner like Synergizip, and that's what we do with our clients, is give them, retain your option that at some point in future, whether the future is a year out or 5 years out, doesn't matter. At some point in future, if you wanted to convert that operation, that team with a partner, into a captive team of your own for whatever reason, you should reserve that right, but not commit to it upfront and incur the risk and the cost of it.
Great. So what changes need to be made to a conventional co-located agile team in order to do development versus testing?
So let me make sure I understand your question. So you're saying how would you differently do a remote model when you're doing just development versus just testing? Or did I misunderstand your question, Cindy?
So I guess it's about really how do you – what's different when you're working with a co-located team? How are the roles different, and what changes do you need to make in order to have it run smoothly?
So I think the main difference, probably the two dominant differences that come to mind when you go from a co-located team to a remote team. One is you end up needing a higher level of software development discipline, which is for the most part a very good thing. In fact, that's one of the big advantages, in my opinion, that you accrue, which looks like a pain in the beginning when you are going from a co-located team to a remote team. Now you have to write requirements down, you know, so which is a wonderful kind of discipline to have to require. Or now you have to actually have a distributed continuous integration process, right? All good things. So I think as soon as you go from a very co-located team to a distributed team, you end up requiring a certain maturity and of your software development process, which is usually a good thing because it forces you to be disciplined. So that's one thing. Second thing, I think, is what you brought up in the beginning, is a product management role. I think that does become more important, because now you can't, the product managers have to be a little bit more disciplined. Requirements have to be written, and writing, the act of writing requirements down, whether you call them stories or call them your PRDs and MRDs, doesn't matter. You still have to put them down on paper and hopefully have some semblance of acceptance testing and all that criteria written down. So product management now needs to be a little bit more buttoned up to allow a distributed remote development team to function well.
So now you're making the distinction between what product management is and what product ownership is. And that's something that we frequently, you know, that languaging is very important, that the product owner is hands-on in the Scrum team, whereas the product manager is looking from a more strategic point of view, but is also must align what's happening in development with the business mission and the business case and the bigger picture.
Right, absolutely.
So thank you, because often when I'm having these discussions on product management from that point of view, from a discipline, is not recognized as distinct from product ownership. And it's confusing for people who are looking to get into product management, and they find themselves, they're deeply involved in managing the tactical efforts, as opposed to they want to be looking at strategic efforts.
Right. Yeah. So let me add one thing, since you brought up this distinction, which is very valuable, Cindy, to clearly understand the distinction, product management, which is more strategic, bigger picture and roadmap and so on, and product owner, which is more day-to-day, working with the development team and making sure development teams have understanding the intent of what needs to be built and so on, that in the remote or distributed development or India remote development topic that we are discussing here, assuming that your market is in U.S., that's very important assumption though, but to explain this point, let me make this assumption that your customers and your market is in U.S., therefore your product management function will need to be in U.S. because that's where the understanding will have to be on the what the customer really needs and how the needs are evolving and all that. So that function can never go to India because that's not where the market is. The market is here. The product owner function is where I said you could have either keep the product owner here and have a proxy product owner play that role in India, or you can have a product owner who over time can play effectively while they're still joined to the hip with the product management function on the U.S. side because that's where the market is. So I think that is important to maintain that clarity. The product management will have to stay on this side because you just cannot take product management away from where the market is.
Yes. But it's still challenging, and I know that people change their sleep patterns if they're dealing with a remote team. And then there's something else, and it may go outside of this conversation, Hemant, but there's a cultural difference as well. And, people working strategically across the organization have to not only deal with the different jargons of the different disciplines and functions, but also the different culture of working with people in India who have a different relationship to hierarchy and power and communication mores than we do here in the U.S.
Right. Absolutely. Agree.
So do you have any clearly working with a company such as Synerzip that is set up already, that avoids all of the issues. But is there anything that you offer to the people who are based here of how to onboard and ramp up quickly with dealing with the remote teams from a general point of view?
Yeah, so I think the key thing there is the emphasis on the team aspect here. One thing we all tend to kind of sidestep in when we're talking about building an engineering or software development team is the word team, which is you can hire, say, 4 developers off the street with some level of scrutiny, but then to have them function, let's say you had to hire 4 developers in 2 QA, let's stick with a balanced team of dev and QA, and you can hire them, go through your recruiting process of filtering and hire them, but they have to come together and function as a team. And that's very important. Agile, fundamental premise of Agile is the measurement and functioning at a team level, not individual level. And that's very important, and it is a very valuable kind of a distinction to always keep in mind, the team aspect. Now, for it is easier said than done that when you assemble these, hire these six individuals over the course of, you know, some number of weeks and they come one by one in the door, you still have to kind of have them start forming and the bonds to function as a team that trusts each other and delivers as a team and has shared responsibility and all that. And I think that's a challenge that companies have is for the company like Synergy, if we really understand that this dynamics of building teams. So when the client comes to us, and this is a very culturally sensitive topic, right, building teams. So the way you build teams in Silicon Valley are perhaps different than how you would build team in India. And that's the part we would bring to the table to your question, Cindy, which is when a client says, look, I need two Scrum teams to scale up my engineering, we would put together two teams for them, not 12 individuals. So I think we help sidestep the challenge of assembling the right team so the team comes together and starts delivering value and quality software right away rather than a client having to deal with the cultural differences and figuring out how to make that team actually function as a team. They may have hired 12 individuals.
Okay, I'm trying to tweet this out. So starting with a cohesive team from the onset is a huge advantage.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so going back to, let's see. So this is part of, what are some do's and don'ts to keep in mind when effectively leveraging offshore in India model. So do you want to go through some of the do's and don'ts? And one of them is being recognizing that starting with a cohesive team is totally an advantage.
Right. Yeah, software is a team sport. I think we all have recognized over the years that building software is a team sport and you've got to treat it that way. Attend to the subtle aspects of team formation and then keeping it as a team and monitoring and measuring it as a team is also important. So in the spirit of do's and don'ts, if you're thinking of doing offshore remote development, one of the things that comes to mind is don't do it if you're don't have a long-term need for it. So, for example, if you have a short project, you need to do some integration work, and in your own engineering assessment, it's a 2 to 3 months worth of work with a small team of a couple developers, maybe one QA. That to me is not worth going through the setup challenge of a remote India-based team, especially brand new team. You're better off doing that in-house or bringing in a couple of contractors locally if you can. So the remote India-based model is more appropriate and it is worth going through only if you have certain amount of a longer-term vision in mind. Now, longer-term in software development is probably 6 to 9 months, or 9 to 12 months. Maybe. So unless you feel you need a team and have a backlog of development for 12 months or so, I think it is I would advise against signing up for India Complexity for a short 3 month project. So that's one kind of a do and don't category, in my opinion. Second, do I would say is if you're going to do it with a partner. If you sign up for India based development model, sign up with a partner. I think that's important to reduce the upfront friction of setting up a shop there and hiring, attracting talent, and all that things I covered. But find a trustworthy partner. There's enough challenges that become some companies have faced. I think trust is very important to have a partner who will understand your needs, and you can trust that partner to assemble the right team, and they will do what they will do what they commit to doing, and they will not commit to anything that they can't do, and all that. So a trustworthy long-term partner is very important because there are enough changes that happen. This is same thing is a principle of Agile, which is collaboration over contracts. And you can do collaboration over contracts in the Agile principle if you have trust. So trust is the fundamental kind of underlying currency you got to have when you're going offshore with a partner. Find a trustworthy partner. And along with finding a trustworthy partner, what goes hand in hand is you've got to treat the remote team as your team. The us versus them aspect that, you know, we're going to do something more challenging and cutting edge work here, any low end work and stuff, we'll throw it over the wall to a team sitting in India. I think that model doesn't work. That's a very short term model. So do it for the long term, do it with the right spirit of a trust-based partnership with a development partner in India, and do it as a one team. So you and your partner see yourself on the same side of the equation, not on the opposing sides. So treat your offshore team as your team, and do invest the time and budget to have some travel back and forth. So a proxy product manager that we talked, a product owner that we talked about, should come visit your US client's team every so often. A product manager or an architect or even an executive from this side should visit team in India. So I think that back and forth travel really is important to build the rapport and the trust and teamwork that is very important in building software. So I think unless you do those kind of things, the model is less likely to be successful.
Excellent, and trust is huge. Hey, so I want to give a shout out to our tweeters who are participating here. Thanks, Alex Cowan. Shout out to Agile Ranking, Rahu Abhyanka, Jim Lundy. And there is a question here, which may or may not be in bounds of the conversation. Thanks, Mauricio Roman. So he asks, what is the advantage of offshore software teams in India versus China or Eastern Europe? And
I'll tell you beyond my real expertise, but I'll tell you from the high level, if we just simplify this question to India versus China versus, you said Eastern Europe?
Yes.
City?
Yes. China or Eastern Europe, not all the BRIC.
Yeah, so the difference is the way I have come across these things is in the China and the India difference is generally language comes up. Again, no, I'm not claiming any expertise, but in general, people feel English language is little, you find it a little easier. The talent pool in India generally tends to have better command of spoken and written English than perhaps in China. So that's one criteria. On the Eastern Europe, the only thing that I keep hearing is often a scale. The size of talent pool in India is much bigger. So if you need eventually a much bigger team, then I think Eastern Europe may not be able to keep up with your growth need for talent pool. India likely will be. So I think that's the distinction that comes up with Eastern Europe versus India on the scalability aspect of the talent pool. And there are other considerations also, but I'm just not, I don't have that confidence in my understanding to be able to share those.
Thank you. So Synerzip works exclusively in India.
Yeah, so we know India model very well. So we have our own development center in India. We have deep expertise in hiring quality talent, and we know how to, you know, retain them and get them jazzed up to deliver quality software. So we have nailed that market, so we stick to our knitting.
Excellent. Okay. So when you are leveraging an offshore India model, what about intellectual property considerations?
Yeah, that's usually is a common kind of a concern that will come early and perhaps rightly so it should, and at least in our target market, we are often talking to leading cutting-edge venture capital-backed software companies who are building something innovative, so IP is absolutely paramount for them. But at least for the India model, our experience is that IP concerns are really not a non-issue. They would come up as they should in the minds of a management team. But the two kind of main mechanisms through which they get addressed and therefore go away never come up. I mean, we've been in this business for 10 years now and we have never had any issue. One is a simple contractual level agreement where all IP that is built belongs to client. So in our case, that's just a standard understanding. We have no, as a service provider company, we have no intellectual property of our own. Any work we do for a client is by definition IP of a client. So we give that in writing to the client, and some clients will have each individual team members sign some sort of IP release agreement upfront, and we are perfectly fine with that. So that puts them at a contractual peace of mind that, you know, the work they're doing with us is indeed their IP, not we won't lay claim to it later. So that's one primary reason. Beyond that, these days, I think any other mechanical or electronic mechanisms of not having removable floppy drives that used to be the case 10 plus years ago, those are gone. People are doing stuff on the cloud these days. You know, a lot of time, anytime the development servers and the source code control is somewhere in the cloud, I think. So, and people are working from home, even in India, often late hours and early mornings and all that. So, for those reasons, I think any other electronic mechanisms of constraining movement of software or bits and bytes is not needed at all, and not anymore. Used to be the case 10 years ago, but not anymore. So that is not needed. Then the only other thing really to keep in or to account for when thinking about IP is to coming back to the trusted partner. Make sure the partner you're using for your development, India development, doesn't have any kind of a IP concerns or conflicts. So, for example, if you are saying to the partner, look, we're going to build something and leverage your IP, you have some building blocks or components you already built, I think you start running into gray areas of where does the line draw of whose IP is it. And we have generally maintained a very clean line, which is, look, we have no IP of our own. All the work we do is IP of our clients. So I think that model seems to generally work well, and we haven't run into any issue on that IP topic.
Excellent. What about going back to a tactical issue on timing? Timing is a big disconnect. Are there best practices or suggestions you can make about timing for a daily scrum or a stand-up?
Yeah, so I think a few thoughts in there. First one is for daily scrum specifically, which is very much a working kind of rhythm of an engineering team in Agile model. They ought to do what I described, the best practice is to keep dev and QA in the same time zone. So you should not, in our opinion, split them across time zones. So then, since they're in the same time zone, let's say they're in India in this case, they ought to do their daily scrum wherever they feel like it. If it works for them first thing in the morning when they all come in, they do a daily scrum, that's fine. If they're doing it at the end of their day, that's fine. It is entirely for the team to decide what is appropriate in given the nature of work and nature of their own kind of a rhythm that they're following. But it is all co-located. Dev and QA is co-located. They're doing their scrum, and the product owner who's remote will then when joined by phone, conference call or phone line or Skype for that matter, and that's fine. So that's kind of a first answer to timing, that it is entirely up to the dev and QA team, which is co-located in any case. Then the other is collaboration on an ongoing basis with the product owner, where you are, let's say, having a deeper discussion. Let's say you're doing your iteration kickoff planning meeting or iteration kickoff. So you're going over the stories, the backlog, and all that, and you have a product owner, full product owner on the US side involved in going through that discussion. And those times you got to figure out, again, as a team, now you have some part of the US team and a bigger part of the India team in this example needing to collaborate on a common time once every week, or at least once every other every 2 weeks on this iteration kickoff and iteration demo kind of events. Those we find in Texas time zone, when you're in central time zone here, what we find work well is we are able to get roughly up to 10 a.m. central time overlap with the India team. When it is 10 a.m. right now today in this time, Central Daylight Savings Time, it is 8:30 p.m. in India. And that's commonly the time up to which teams are in the office. they start their day late. That's very common in India these days. The developers will come into office around 10:30, 11 a.m., very common, and they will stay till 8:30, 9 p.m. That's a typical day of an engineering development team, companies who are serving U.S., which is pretty much dominant part of what happens with software world in India. So overlapping with the U.S. open morning time and India evening time is generally what we see as a common overlap time to collaborate with the U.S. product management slash product owner team and the India engineering team.
Excellent. Okay, so we're coming up to the end of the hour. And thank you very much, Hemant, for going into depth. There's some Twitter activity now, and as happens, it'll lag. There'll be some more Twitter activity after we're done and as people listen on demand. So I'm very excited to have had this discussion with you, and I'm looking forward to giving the webinar for CineZip on Tuesday, March 25th, where I'll be talking about what Lean brings to product marketing, which is outside. I'll have to incorporate on working with a remote team into that discussion. So join us again immediately on Tuesday, March 25th. Go to CineZip.com, and that will be a webcast including visuals as well as a presentation. And also very excited, coming up here in Silicon Valley, this Saturday is Product Camp Silicon Valley. It is the first product camp that started many years ago. They expect, I think, up to 1,000 people coming together at PayPal in Silicon Valley. I will be there if you didn't get a ticket, but you're on the wait list, plan to show up early to get through security. And I'll be hosting the pre-product camp Silicon Valley dinner Friday night. So join me to do some networking and have a great dinner sponsored by the AIPMM on Friday night. Just go to startupproduct.com, look at the calendar. These product events and upcoming events and webinars are also listed on the calendar and the schedule there. Thank you so much, Hemant, for joining me today. Do you have any ending notes you'd like to make?
No, I just want to thank you, Cindy, for bringing this conversation up. This is an excellent topic, and I appreciate you guys organizing this conversation.
Thank you so much. And it is something that is grappled with all the time, you know, from the product management point of view. So is there additional information that you want to point people to find out more?
Yes, I think one of the good things to do, sorry, I had this other line come up. The best thing I can point people to perhaps is our website. We do monthly webinars on topics related to agile software development, and we incorporate the remote development as an inherent part of it and cover product management role, the role of QA, how to break stories, and all that. So I would encourage people to go to our website, look at, every month we do a webinar, and then we record it and put it up for offline viewing. So people are welcome to help themselves to that content.
Excellent. So thank you so much. We've been speaking with Hemant Elhens, the CEO of CineZip, about leveraging remote software development in India. Podcast will be available on iTunes. Just search for ProdMGMTTALK. It's also syndicated on Stitcher, on Blurberry, on all of the podcasts, and you can listen to it directly from the startupproduct.com website. And again, coming up this weekend is Product Camp Silicon Valley, and definitely join us on March 25th for What Lean Brings to Product Marketing, a webinar I'll be presenting with CineZip on Tuesday. Thanks again, and next week on the show we'll be talking about a new book on innovation. So tune in again next week. Follow us at www.cinezip.com. blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Thanks to our tweeters. Shout out to our community, and have a great week.
Thank you. Bye.
Lost to a thief on a dry wind.